Welcome back to another episode of Classic Movies Live, the pre-recorded show where we talk about movies that just came out. And today, we are going to be talking about a movie called Caught Stealing. This is, I believe, only the second time we've talked about Darren Aronofsky, who regular listeners of the show may remember was eliminated in our director showdown bracket when he went up against Sarah Pauly. This movie fares a little bit better, though. I will tell you right now, we both liked it quite a bit, but it's one that we had a fairly short discussion about, so I'm going to leave you guys with that. I'm going to say, you know, I hope you enjoy what we have to say about this. It's fairly short. There are spoilers, but we give a pretty good spoiler warning. So, yeah, this one's, you know, nice, short, and sweet about a movie that you should probably go see. And we're going to start this off with a song called Rabbit Run by Idols, who did the songs for the movie. Run. Welcome back to another episode of Classic Movies Live, the pre-recorded show where we talk about Darren Aronofsky sometimes. Today's going to be one of those days. We're talking about the new Darren Aronofsky movie, Caught Stealing. Pierre, have you seen this movie?
I did. It's probably my favorite Darren Aronofsky movie because I usually hate his movies.
It's weirdly normal for a Darren Aronofsky movie. Like, not quite, but it's no Mother.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess it is a little, I'd say, quirky, but, like, yeah, it's not nearly, and it's also just, it's very different, and I never, if you showed me this, you would never guess Darren Aronofsky directed it, if that makes sense.
I think if you showed me this and told me this is directed by either David Fincher or Darren Aronofsky, I'd probably say David Fincher.
Yeah, probably.
It's like, I mean, like, you compare it to other David Fincher movies, and no, it's clearly not, but it looks way closer to one of those than to a Darren Aronofsky movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think last one we talked about was Mother on the Director Showdown. And I don't know, I actually haven't seen The Whale, so I don't know if, but I also heard that was very much in his style, right? So it's not like this has been some time coming to get this type of movie from him.
Honestly, this one is like, have you seen Requiem for a Dream?
No. I'm too scared to be honest.
That's the movie of his that this reminds me the most of, but it is even very, very different from that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is just like, Mother and The Whale are very, well, The Whale a little less so, but Mother and The Whale are both very weird. The Whale does that thing that a lot of movies that are based on plays do, where it feels like a play, but like where something like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom felt like it was like literally people walking around on a stage doing a play.
Yeah.
The Whale feels like you can tell it's a play, but it also like it does feel like it uses like the medium of film in a way that to do things that a play wouldn't be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's still mostly one guy in his apartment doing things.
Right.
Like, it's a little more than that, but it still feels very, it feels like a play, but it feels like a Darren Aronofsky version of a play. Where, like, this movie I think that Darren Aronofsky goes to some, like, really interesting places with it. Like, he does some things that you don't expect in the moment, but I think it is very much, like, it's pretty much just a linear crime drama or thriller or like kind of an action movie. Like I said, he goes to some weird places with it, like moment to moment, but it's very, It's weirdly straightforward for a Darren Aronofsky movie.
Yeah, it feels like it's weird. It feels like the script, I would say, is something that, like, it's not, I don't know, it doesn't really feel anything special. Like, it's something I feel like I could, it's like a decent action movie on Netflix type script, you know. I will say, like, though, that, like, I think what adds to it is the fact that he is a really good director, and there's like all the little things that I feel like this script in most movies might just be a very generic movie, but there's a lot of these little things that you can tell kind of come from a very experienced and talented director that kind of add to the experience, I'd say, and help you appreciate it more.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
So before we get into it, do you want to tell us a little bit about what Caught Stealing is about?
Sure. It's essentially, you have Hank, Austin Butler's character. Thank you. I never remember the names. And he is kind of dealing with some trauma from his past, but he's in a relationship that he's really happy in. But I think he seems a little unsatisfied with his life in terms of, like, he feels stuck, if that makes sense. And his neighbor, who...
Russ,
who is played by Matt Berry.
Matt Smith
has to go to London to take care of his dad, and he asks Hank to take care of his cat. I think the next day, someone tries to break into Russ's house, and Hank gets involved in kind of a big crime ring thing that he is in over his head to be involved in. But unfortunately, he is, and he has to figure out a way to deal with it while also solving his own traumas. That's essentially what it comes down to.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a guy at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
But, like, it's very bleak for, like, a guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. He never, like, figures out what's going on and, like, well, it takes him a while to, like, figure out what's going on and even try to get the better of the people that are after him.
Yeah.
But most of the time, he's just like, how do I get out of this? And keeps getting, like, absolutely demolished by the next bad guy.
Yeah. I would say it does feel very reminiscent of, like, Fargo in that sense, where you have, I guess he's not really a simple person. He has a lot of stuff going on with him, but, you know, getting involved in something bigger, and a lot of, like, the criminals, like, I feel like Fargo kind of had this vibe of, like, it's big crime, but also they're very, like, caricaturish, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of got the same vibe here, where, like, the bad guy is, like, they feel very real, yet not real, because, you know, I feel like mob people aren't usually, like, you know, guys in suits or whatever. They're not very organized. They're just random guys that are doing, like, random things. And that this movie kind of gives that vibe, where it's like it's professional crime, but it's also kind of realistic in that these are kind of weird people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like the Jewish gangsters are very Jewish. Like, they're Orthodox Jews.
Yeah.
The Russian gangsters are very Russian. And they're like, one of the Russian gangsters is named Microbe, and he's just this guy who's permanently angry and, like, very small. And he's really funny.
And he, like, the way you fight, like, I think in the first scene you see him, I mean, he headbutts Hank by, like running like a dog and running him into the wall, which is, like, such a weird thing, you know. It's, like, such a weird character thing to do, but, like, it's those little things that really add to the movie.
He's like how you would write a fast zombie for a video game,
right? yeah So it's like Darren Aronofsky was really good at, like, kind of creating, it's a relatively big cast, there's a lot of characters in this, and they all definitely have, like, their own unique thing going, if that makes sense. There's no, like, there's no character in this where I'm like, this is a boring character. They're all very interesting people.
Mm-hmm. Even the minor characters, like, there's the guy, Hank's boss at the beginning of the movie is this very old guy who owns a bar and, like, does a lot of drugs, named Paul. And he's awesome. Like, he's only in the movie for probably a combined 5 minutes, but he really makes an impression. Played by Griffin Dunne. So, you know, not a small actor either.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has honestly, it's really, like he has a great scene, but also, like, when you think about it at times, this movie's, like, really dark. Like, essentially,
oh, yeah.
Hank loses a lot in this movie, and And it is kind of off-putting because, again, like, at first glance, this feels like a kind of silly caper, like, but there's some very deep moments. And also, like, I'd also say, like, the main kind of emotional arc for him in terms of, like, you know, there's this line where Zoe Kravitz is like, I really want to, like, commit to this, but you seem like, or I know you're someone that keeps running away from the things he's afraid of, essentially. And she's like, I don't know if we can make this work until you can actually confront a lot of these things that you're dealing with, you know? And, yeah. And it's, you know, it's not like a very complex, like, emotional arc or whatever, but, like, it is very, I think it was done very well. And you see throughout the movie how, I mean, there's, like, these weird, like, kind of full circle things where, like, you know, when he was younger, he was a baseball player. And I think that's something he really regrets not being able to take forward into his life. And at the end of the movie, he's, you know, like, he's defeating the main villain with a baseball bat, you know, it's kind of like, so there's stuff like that, or, you know, his fear of driving and stuff. And yeah, it's like, it's not a huge thing, but it's still very satisfying to see a movie set up an emotional arc and have it pay off very well by the end of the movie. It's a lot more rare than I think we realize in movies.
Yeah, and I think that, like, what's so cool about this movie is the payoff for it is actually, like, even the payoff is really dark. Like, the way that it paid, like, early on, or throughout the movie, he keeps getting flashbacks to, he keeps, like, remembering basically the reason that he ended up coming to New York and the reason that he's not playing Major League Baseball, because he was, like, drunk driving and he crashed a car and killed his friend. And it, like, shattered his knee so he could, like, never play baseball again.
Yeah.
And, like, he keeps coming back to that. And the way that resolves at the end is, like, well, it's a spoiler, so we'll get to it. Yeah. But the way that resolves at the end, like, is kind of satisfying. But then I feel like you think about it for one more minute, and it's like, yeah, but this is, like, not a good resolution. This is like a negative character arc resolution.
Well, yeah, in some ways it's
ultimately satisfying, but it's not like he's gone through and become a good person. He's gone through and become, like, kind of a bad person, but just successful in that. I don't want to make that sound like I'm saying he's, like, a mob boss or anything. No, he manages to, like, deal with his shit, but that's, like, it.
I'd say, well, okay, should we just do spoilers?
Yeah, might as well.
Before spoilers, I'll say it's a great movie. I definitely think you should watch it.
One of if not my favorite Austin Butler performance.
Yeah, for sure. He's very good in this.
All right, spoilers now.
Okay, so yeah, I feel like, you know, when he, like, I mean, it's not subtle at all, but, like, him running into the pillar and stuff. I thought there was, like, some, because it was like his girlfriend was the one to tell him that, like you really need to, like, tackle the past if you want to move forward, right? And I guess it was because he still hadn't really confronted his fears until he did that, if that makes sense. Like, he went through the whole movie and I think he grew a lot. But also there was nothing there that really, like, his life still kind of sucked, you know. It was just like, everyone died. These guys are kind of giving him a chance to go, but also they're not good people. Like, they were very willing to kill him at a certain point.
Well, they also revealed to him that they killed his girlfriend.
Right. And they did it in a really shitty way too.
Oh, like, yeah.
The most, like, by the way, like, we killed your girlfriend, and what are you going to do about it, type thing.
It's so funny seeing Vincent D'Onofrio in that, because Liev Schreiber, like, brings out Austin Butler's girlfriend's lighter, and is like, light it up for me. And Vincent D'Onofrio is like, oh, no, why would you do that? What are you doing?
Yeah, Which is weird because they had both agreed that they wouldn't kill him because their mom liked him, essentially.
Yeah.
But also they're like, I guess, like, you know, they're dicks. So, like, of course they're going to try to pull something like that. It feels like just like, I guess it felt like a reminder of like, we're letting you get off, but like, we could still fuck your life up if we want to, you know?
It kind of felt like a reminder to the audience a little bit too, that like, no, these Jewish gangsters he's hanging out with are awful. Because, right, like, up until that point, not up until that point, but like immediately up until that point, yeah, they are like going around and killing a lot of people, but they're also being very nice to Austin Butler. Right. And so it kind of feels like they're almost the good guys. They're like anti-heroes in a way.
Yeah.
And then, like, just as a reminder, they are dicks, they are evil.
They are evil, yeah. And I mean, I feel like Hank kind of feels that too. He's like, they're bad guys, but they let me live, so like, maybe this is okay. And then that was like a reminder to him that like, no way, like, this isn't okay. They're bad people. And so I thought it was a nice full circle where it was like, he kind of confronted his fears for his girlfriend, you know, even though she had passed. And that was kind of the completion. And then he could, you know, he could take the money and leave. And that was kind of symbolic of him fully leaving the past behind and moving on with his life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As like a new man. So I thought that really worked. Even though, yeah, it's like, I mean, it is really depressing that, like, you know, it was in revenge of the people that killed his girlfriend, but like, you know, well, like,
and
yeah.
And it's kind of depressing because, like, yes, he does fully choose to leave his life behind, but he also does so by putting himself in a position where he actually has no other choice. Not that there was he has to leave New York. Like, he will, he's...
Oh, he's, I never thought of it that way, actually. Yeah, he, yeah, I guess there's no...
He killed many people. Everyone that they killed, he's kind of responsible for because he's the only one still around.
Yeah. But so, I mean, like, either way, I don't think there was any future, like...
No, there's no
everything,
future.
Like, he...
I think that's just,
workplace,
like...
workplace was shot up, his girlfriend's dead... Like,
yeah. I mean, that's just why I'm saying, like, this movie is extremely bleak. Every time there's anything that can resolve, it resolves in a very bleak way.
Very dark way, yeah, for sure.
And like, I think what I was trying to get at earlier about how, you know, the ending, well, how the ending, like, what I was trying to get into earlier about, like, his character, the resolution of his character arc is, like, basically, he is who he is because he accidentally, like, while drunk driving, he accidentally ran into that pole and killed his friend. And he didn't even care because his knee was shattered. And that was, like, that was, for him, it's like, my life is over. Mm-hmm. Not even thinking about his friend. And then at the end, like, he crashed a car while sober, deliberately killing two people for someone else. So it's like, yeah, it does reverse that.
Right,
it resolves it. It's not like a nice bow that it's putting on things, but it does resolve it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, but I mean, even so, like, I think what makes this movie stick out too is how willing it is to get dark. You know, like, his girlfriend, like, they have a fight, and then the next day, no, I think later that night she dies, right? Like, just straight up. There's no last words or anything. It was off screen. Like, it's brutal.
When I saw that, I was like, well, there's no way. Like, there's like, he's calling 911 and it's going to be fine. Right. And
yeah.
No, she's gone. She's out of the movie.
Yeah, for sure. And even like, even little things like losing a kidney after getting beat up. Like, that's honestly realistically how things would happen if you were beat up like that. Like, you don't just get knocked unconscious. Like,
yeah. And it's crazy because it's like, he loses a kidney and then later on he like suffers from trying to live the life he had before losing a kidney.
Right.
I mean, heavy drinker, right. And he's told no more drinking, and then he does, and he suffers for it because he doesn't have a kidney.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it's always like those, again, these little things, like I think all the punches really hit, all the gunshots really hit for some, like, there's that scene where Matt Smith's got like the, what is that? That mini, he's got like a mini handgun and in a parking lot, and he's like shoot, like it jams, and he also like he unjams it and he shoots it up in the air accidentally. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's like those little details, and like the fact that he dies randomly for like from brain trauma from earlier. It's like,
yeah, he gets head trauma and then he's just forced to not address it for like 2 hours, and then he dies from exhaustion from head trauma.
Right. Again, so it's like, that's actually what would happen if you're hit in the head with a baseball bat, I think, for the most
part. There's like, there's not really any, I mean, for lack of a better word, there's not really any like spectacular deaths in this. People just like expire.
Yeah. Yeah. Which oddly feels very refreshing, to be honest. Like,
weirdly enough, yeah.
Yeah. And then it helps it stick out.
This movie gets like a lot of mileage out of anti-climaxes without feeling like it does that.
Yeah, for sure.
There's one thing I just want to know if you noticed it, like the scene where they try to meet up, and like it's Matt Smith's character has just come back. They drive to the meetup point and like Austin Butler is like pretending he's going to give up Matt Smith to like, as a fall guy to like split up the money. Mm-hmm. And that's where things go south briefly, but that turns into a chase sequence where like Austin Butler and Matt Smith are hobbling forward at like a snail's pace, and the people behind them, who are Regina King and it's the Little Russian guy Microbe. Mm-hmm. Regina King and Microbe are like running at a full sprint, and they never seem to get closer. It's so funny to me because, like, initially there's a lot of distance between them. So, like, you can kind of believe that they wouldn't catch up right away as Austin Butler is, like, hobbling with Matt Smith.
Yeah.
But then, like, Austin Butler and Matt Smith get to a bridge on the way to Yankee Stadium. And then they, like, get into a subway. And every time they show, like, a front-on shot to show that, like, they're still being chased, mm-hmm. it seems like Regina King and Microbe are still the exact same amount distance behind them. Right. It's really funny because it's like they never move. Yeah. And they're constantly at this full clip.
Yeah. Even like I loved for some, like this is such a weird thing to notice, but I love the when they're on the train and they're escaping and just like the pounding on the window that was a Microbe, right?
I think Microbe, yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, because he tries to get through the window. He's like starts like really going for it,
right? Yeah, but he's yeah, and that's I don't know why I was like that felt very scary for a second. I've never seen someone go so aggressive. Usually they just give up when they're in the train, right?
Yeah,
but like he was still going at it. I was like, damn. But yeah,
the guy who plays Microbe, I think that's Nikita Kukushkin. Mm-hmm. He's hilarious in this because he is so like he's at 100 all the time,
right?
Every time he's like shit talking or trying to fight someone or actively fighting someone or, you know, fighting the person that he's there with.
Yeah.
He's just constantly, he's constantly on. It's, he's very funny.
Yeah.
And especially because like when he actually does finally get into a fight where it's like an even fight, he just gets taken out right away.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly, the whole cast in this is really good. And that's another thing. Like, all the performances are great. I actually really like. I don't usually like Zoe Kravitz, to be honest. I thought she was really good in this. She doesn't mm-hmm. I mean, obviously doesn't have a big huge role, but she was great. And yeah, Austin Butler. Like, I haven't really seen him anything I've loved. Like, I thought he was great at Elvis, but again, like, I think when we talked about it, felt more like an impersonation than like a true performance that I got into, you know. And but this way it's a pretty simple character, and I feel like this would be relatively tough to like get a lot out of, you know, for mm-hmm. but he made Hank like just like a really like you were really rooting for him, you know. It was like and you could feel a lot of pain in the performance, and he really did everything he could to like squeeze everything he could out of a relatively simple like script, you know.
it's like, this is not a movie about baseball, but it's a movie where I like really cared about the Giants by the end, even though the, like, because like every time he calls his mom, the first thing they do is update each other on the most recent Giants game.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, saying like Matt Smith, I thought he was just wild in this and he was having a lot of fun. I think he's just in that point in his career where he's just having fun with acting, to be honest.
I remember the first press, not the first press, the first like, the first behind the scenes photo of this was just like Matt Smith with a giant mohawk. And I was like, now what's going on here?
Vincent D'Onofrio, Liev Schreiber, like it's a stacked cast too, and like, yeah, I don't know, like go ahead.
I'm a little surprised that this movie isn't like way more, like that there isn't way more advertising for this movie, because I knew about it, but like I haven't seen that many trailers or like haven't really seen that much about this movie. Honestly, and it is a stacked cast.
It's,
yeah,
the trailers made it look really bad too, to be honest. Yeah, like it looked, fair. Made it look really corny and like cheesy, and it's a much more mature of a movie than it was. Like I wouldn't have watched this if we weren't going to talk about it, because it just didn't interest me.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
But yeah, I really liked it. Oh, also Bad Bunny was in this. He was really good. Every time I see this man in a movie, he's amazing. So I don't know what's going on with him, but like he's a very talented person.
Well, and I'm really glad that like the last movie I saw him in was Bullet Train, where I really liked him, but I think he was silent in that movie. And this one, he actually like got to speak, and he was very good in a speaking role.
Yeah, for sure.
And like he played his character. His character is he did that character so perfectly, because like his character was a guy who was like all bark and no bite, but you like were real scared of him until like you saw the person that he worked with and she was like, oh yeah, he can never pull the trigger. Yeah. And then even the next time he comes out, he's like, you still think, oh, this guy's dangerous, and he still never pulls the trigger. He's like actually a wimp in this.
Yeah,
but like he's where Microbe is all bite and no bark, this like he's actually all bark and no bite in a really in like a really good like
dynamic
to him.
For sure. I don't know what else to say. Like it's not a complicated movie, it's really simple, and I just think Darren Aronofsky like did this movie in the best way you could. He really gave it all for a pretty simple premise, to be honest.
I think I don't think we need to say too much more about it. It's really pretty straightforward. I think one thing that is interesting, this is apparently based on a book, which now I'm interested in reading, but the book is a trilogy. Now, I don't really think this movie lends itself to, I don't think this movie like needs a sequel or anything. But like, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that there's like any room for a sequel for this?
No.
Yeah, not really.
How would you, unless I think it'd be funny if there was what he came back, like he was the neighbor that comes back. And he gets someone else mixed up in it, and he still has like the mohawk to look like Russ or something. I think that'd be kind of funny.
That would be kind of funny.
It feels like a pretty open and shut movie, I guess.
I do wonder with movies that are adapted off of books that themselves that like are big series of books. I always wonder with stuff like this, like what does the next book look like? Like, I don't know, because I obviously didn't. I didn't even realize this was based on a book until earlier today. But like, what is there after this? Because I guess you can reuse this character, but like, there's no. He kind of gets an ending that is. He gets a satisfying ending, and most everyone in this movie dies. So.
Yeah, I mean the ending's kind of funny too. Like it's a really comedic scene. He imitates Russ to leave, and it's very obviously not him, but like the flight attendant just seems like, fuck it, like I really don't want to get involved in this, so she lets him on.
She's like, she kind of just looks like, I'm not paid enough to deal with whatever's going on here,
right? Yeah, so it's funny how like it is a pretty funny movie, to be honest, and like I never felt like it conflicted with the tone though, like it's because there's a lot of dark stuff too, but it always felt okay, you know, because that last scene, like for oddly like realistic movie, it's a very unrealistic way of resolving it, where he just, it's like the most comedic way possible of like leaving America. But also, like, at that point, I was just like, I just want this guy to like live a good life, like let him go, like let him enjoy it. So it didn't really bother me at all.
I think it's very funny that, like, right at the end, he sends his mom like $2 million and she's like, oh shit.
Yeah. I feel like if someone sent you $2 million just like out of nowhere, are you allowed to keep that? Like, what, like, or does she have to, because for tax reasons, she would have to declare, right? But then how do you declare someone sent me $2 million in cash and I don't know who sent it?
I don't know, man.
Like, she's not going to say her son sent it to her. So she's going to be like, $2 million was at my door. I don't know why. I
received a box with $2 million. Couldn't tell you where from.
Right? I don't know. But yeah, he deserved a happy ending, and I'm happy he got it. So yeah.
Yeah. I hope his mom doesn't have to pay exorbitant taxes.
Yeah. That's the sequel. She gets hit by the IRS, and now he has to come back to America to save his mother from the IRS.
I would actually love that if, like, the sequel to, like, kind of a straightforward gangster action movie like this was one woman dealing with the IRS.
Right. I'd watch it. I'd watch Darren. I like Darren Aronofsky directing simple things, so I'd actually watch him do that too.
I think he can. I think that this movie shows he can put like a really cool spin on very simple things if he's like restricted to that.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, that's not like that. I feel like that's an underrated skill. You know, like I feel like. Because, like, what I saw, for like example, The Killer with David Fincher, I feel like that's a movie that could have been very much improved by like amazing directing. And to me, it felt like he kind of phoned it in.
Gotcha.
And because I feel like he wasn't really maybe challenging himself or something, but I think there is something to be said about a great director being able to take a very simple script and make it great. If that makes sense. That's, I feel like that's more of a challenge in some ways than doing whatever, you know, like I don't think Christopher Nolan could ever direct a simple movie like this, to be honest. He can't do it. But I mean, I maybe would have said the same thing about Darren Aronofsky before and I would be wrong. So
I'm trying to think what's Christopher Nolan's most simple movie? Maybe Batman Begins.
I'd say The Dark Knight. It's like Batman Begins still has a lot of like that, like the, he's telling it non-chronologically.
Oh, so, right. Yeah.
Which was like his thing. So, yeah, I'd say Dark Knight or maybe Dark Knight Rises. But yeah.
Dark Knight Rises gets, I think it's not like formally weird, but it does have like, it's kind of a weird script. Like it's a weird story.
It is very weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for a superhero movie, to be honest. We're going to make him spend half the movie in a cave, in a prison. I don't know. I honestly, I kind of hope I see Darren Aronofsky make another simple movie. I would watch that. If his next movie's weird, I'm not watching it. I'm sorry. I'm sure it'll be great and interesting and whatever, but I'm not watching it.
If his next movie's weird, I'll pre-screen it for you.
That's nice. That's very thoughtful of you.
All right, Pierre, what's our last word for today?
Cat.